I'm sitting here in our Indianapolis Children's Museum in a fifth grade classroom, not from 2012, but from 1960, the year that Ruby Bridges, she was Ruby Bridges then, she's Ruby Bridges Hall now, walked escorted by some big, beefy, real tall United States Marshals. She was the first African American to integrate an elementary school in this country in her beloved New Orleans. The last time we talked to her was literally a couple of weeks after the tragedy of Katrina. But Ruby is dedicated to making sure that America's young people and the world's young people understand what she went through back in 1960, the sacrifices she made, the courage she made as a young child, and the kinds of courage that young people should have today in doing their dreams. And so it's an honor to be in the official classroom of Ruby Bridges and her school here at the Children's Museum. Ruby, first of all, it's an honor to finally meet you in person.
It is my pleasure. Thank you so much for coming to talk to me.
When you helped design this exhibit here, The Power of Children, your area here in our Children's Museum, do emotions come back to you every time you come back and visit this classroom, Mrs. Henry's classroom?
It does. I mean, it's sort of, for me, it's like walking back in time. I think what it makes it emotional is when I'm actually here at the desk and speaking to kids from across the city that come to share their ideas about what's going on in their lives and in their school. And it gets emotional at that point for me.
One of the things that I've told the listeners this on many occasions, and when I go out into the community and talk to young people and talk about the civil rights movement, is making sure they understand that young people were out there as part of the point of the spear. The Dr. King and the leaders, the freedom riders, these were all teenagers, individuals in their 20s, those young people like you, whether they were in Little Rock or whether they were in New Orleans, that had to break those barriers, were young people. When you talk about your experiences, do our kids today get it?
I think they do get it. I should say what they get is what's happening to them today and how they can actually relate to what was going on with me at that point in time. I think what kids do is that they sort of put themselves in the shoes of this child that they see, myself, and, you know, I think they feel that they understand the loneliness, they understand the hurt feelings. What they can't seem to grasp is the fact that all of that came from adults. I think that's what bothers them the most.
You've got a foundation, Ruby Bridges Foundation. You do a lot of work with young people. What's the kind of work that you do?
The work that I do, I mean, one of the main missions of the foundation today is actually working to help restore the very school that I integrated, because it was actually hit and destroyed by Hurricane Katrina. And we worked to put it on the National Registry, and, you know, it's due to be completed and opened January of 2013. So that's sort of the main work. I am trying to apply for a charter to operate that school myself.
I was getting ready to ask you when that school reopens, whether that would be part of this new Orleans system that they have down there, where all of the reopened school or the schools that are under construction reopened are under this new state commission, where they're kind of everybody opens up as a charter.
Just about. That school will definitely open as a charter school, and you know, I can apply, and anyone else who's interested in actually operating a charter school. It just seemed appropriate that myself and the foundation apply to hire educators to come in and actually teach. But what I want to teach in that building is actually history. Because as you say, you know, the civil rights movement, kids can't really grasp what really happened. And it's not just a civil rights movement. I believe that one of the main issues that we're having as far as education is concerned today is that history is not really being taught the way history happened. I think that, you know, we all know that the history books today are really obsolete. There's so many stories that happened during the Civil Rights Movement and other parts of history that's been omitted from our history books.
Should we be concerned that state governments, state departments of education are messing with history? They're censoring history. I mean, I think I read somewhere where people want to teach the Southern version of the Civil War, and it's like, how can you teach the version and you lost this? Do we need to be concerned that politics is entering in on how we teach future generations of young people American and even world history?
I'm concerned about it. I don't know if everyone else should be.
Should my listeners be concerned about it?
I think so. And the reason why, I can just give you an example. Whenever I'm talking to kids or speaking, I usually speak from my own experience. And that's what you're going to get right now at this point in time. For me, I grew up thinking that the Civil Rights Movement was all about one race against the other. Mm-hmm. White against black, black against white. Because that is actually the way that it was taught to me. For a very, very long time, I did not know that there were white folks and black folks that actually gave their lives together, fighting for equal rights. I mean, if you go back to thinking about the Freedom Riders, they were both black and white. And I remember the very first time I had an opportunity to visit a civil rights museum in Birmingham, I was able to see the bus that they had been on. I was able to see their photographs, and that changed my outlook. I wasn't aware that kids were actually being murdered until I saw the bombing of those four little girls. And that, you have to understand, really bothered me because I was a child. I wasn't aware of the three young men that had been shot together and buried together in Mississippi, and the fact that two were white and one was black, because that was omitted from my history books. I wasn't aware of the woman that went down to drive people back. Exactly. Mm-hmm. She's not in our history books. I believe that it actually had, it shaped the way that I viewed the civil rights movement, because so much of that was omitted from the standardized textbooks that we were using.
You're using the B word, and that's books. And we're in a society today where the young people that you talk to are getting their information not necessarily from a printed book, but they're getting it from cell phones and tablets and computers and all these little iPads and stuff. The civil rights movement was one of the first indigenous human rights movements to be recorded on film, to be recorded on video, to be recorded on audio. When we talk about teaching our history, and when I say our shared American history, how much of that needs to really be in the modern media that today that grabs today's young people?
I think it needs to be just all-inclusive. Mm-hmm. I think it needs to be in books. I think it needs to be on just in all the electronic things that kids use today. I think it needs to be taught in a different way. However we teach it, whatever tool we use, it needs, the truth is what needs to be taught. Mm. And I don't necessarily think that that's what kids are getting today.
Is it also, and I think they ought to give you the charter for the charter school. You know, forget other applications. You've earned the right and ought to be that. But when you bring up a point about history, usually when everybody talks about a charter school, it's for math, it's for science, it's for some high tech fall to all, and everybody is into this college prep, job ready. And by that token, you would say, well, history has nothing to do with getting a college degree. History has nothing to do with being employer ready or job ready. Is this over focus on those educational buzzwords, is that also inhibiting our kids learning our history?
I just believe that for me, history is the truth. Mm-hmm. It's sacred. I don't think any of us have the right to change or alter history in any way. So I believe that we need to start with a new foundation. And that foundation has to be based on the truth. No matter what we teach on top of it, it needs to be based on the truth. And that takes me back to history. I do honestly believe that what we've been taught all these years, that you have to know where you come from to know where you're going. I think that is very, very true. And again, that takes us back to history. So what I really want to teach in that school is the truth. History, and I believe that once we begin to unravel that truth, we will find that we are more connected than what we think. That we are more, we have more in common than we have that separates us. So I believe that for me, I want that school to start with the truth, but then also teach community service and social justice.
There are African-American kids today that have never attended a segregated school. Their whole educational life is being a minority in a integrated in an integrated school. Do they get it? Because sometimes I think today's young people think, oh, that's something that happened in the olden days. That bigotry doesn't occur today. When you talk to young people, does that start to come out of them that maybe they start to realize maybe they're seeing the, you know, some bias and bigotry that maybe they didn't realize?
Yes, I think it does come out. Because I make it a point of talking about it, to be honest with you. Because for most of our kids, you're absolutely right. They cannot even fathom that those things actually even took place. I have kids of my own. My youngest is 20. And it was very hard for him to grasp that. I mean, he didn't grow up in that era. You know, it was very hard when you start to show those archival, you know, photographs. And I remember speaking to a group the other day when I said, you know, you remember the photographs where you see dogs being, that dogs were attacking, you know, people. And this kid immediately looked at me and he said, dogs attacking people. He just couldn't even believe that. But I said, yes, absolutely. And if you don't believe me, why don't you go back and ask your teacher? So for most of our kids in this generation, they cannot even believe that that happened. But they need to know. They need to know that that happened. They need to know why it happened. Because I believe that history can repeat itself.
Did you ever meet any of the young people that shouted those hateful things to you when you integrated that school? Did you ever meet them as adults?
On one occasion, I did. It was a man that I met. He belonged to a certain church. The minister wrote me and said that he had a person that was a part of his congregation who admitted that he was outside of the school. And that he was 17 at the time, and he was just going along with what his friends wanted to do, and that he had since made his life right, but that was one thing that wasn't right, and that he wanted an opportunity to apologize to me. And so they invited me to the church to meet with him, and he did indeed apologize.
You are part of one of the most historic paintings, not in this country's history, maybe in this world's history, with Norman Rockwell. Did you ever get to meet him?
No, but I sit on the Norman Rockwell board. I never had an opportunity to meet him. I have met his son, who's still alive, but just sitting on their board, I learned quite a bit about Norman Rockwell. I mean, that really impressed me. I wouldn't be a part of their board if I wasn't impressed. What impressed me about Norman Rockwell is that he took a stand. You know, he had been painting for, I think, the Saturday Evening Post for years and years, and all those photographs that, you know, we see hanging in doctor's offices and that sort of thing. But there were at least four pieces that he painted that made a huge political statement. The Norman Rockwell, The Problem We All Live With, which is the one that I am depicted in, was one of them. But there's another of the three young men that were shot and murdered in Mississippi, which is a hugely powerful piece. And then there's one called Moving Day, of a black family moving into a white neighborhood. So there's about four pieces that he painted like that. And for him, that was a bold move back then, because The Problem We All Live With, the Saturday Evening Post would not publish it. It was published in Look magazine, and even they wouldn't publish it on the cover. It was published inside of the magazine.
This was someone whose paintings represented Americana at that time.
Absolutely. And yet, here he was uneasy with the climate in the country at the time, and he wanted to make a statement about it. And so he painted these pieces, and, you know, he got a lot of backlash for it.
You've got a great website that gives a lot of information about you, your story, the Ruby Bridges Foundation. See how smart you are. Give me the web address so we can make sure that all of our listeners kind of check it out and bring that history into where their kids are.
It's rubybridgesfoundation.org, and there is lots of great information on it. It talks a little bit about the work that I'm doing across the country. So I would love for people to go onto it, take a look at it, and, you know, reach out, because I believe that the work that I am trying to do with our kids across the country is hugely important. We have got to somehow get past our racial differences. And I believe that if we are, it's going to come from our kids.
And if you have not been in our Children's Museum and seen the power of children making a difference, not only Ruby's story, but Anne Frank's story and Indiana's own Ryan White's story, three unique young people who in their own way made a powerful difference in this world. And Ruby, it is always a privilege when I have the privilege to meet living American history, not just African American history, but living American history. I'm just glad that I got the opportunity to finally meet you here in my community. And please enjoy yourself. And of course, this is your school, so you're welcome back. I think they give you the lifetime gold admission electronic badge in the museum.
I think so. I mean, you know, I come once a year and I teach a class in this particular classroom, and kids from all across Indianapolis, they write me letters. We choose some of the best letters, and they come and they attend my class. So,
Ruby Bridges Hall, it's an honor and a privilege to have you on the program. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.